Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck and check out more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Derek Jeter!
This is the Yanks Go Yard Podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome on into the Yanks Go Yard Podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. The Yankees were unkind to us and refused to schedule a three-game series neatly tucked between two episodes. So they're two out of three done in Anaheim right now. Instead of a traditional series recap, we wanted to do something a little bit more fun after the first two. So we're going to be talking about concentrating the conversation on Yankees' truths and their corresponding lies, as well as giving credit to Louis' heel, giving unfair credence probably to a Gerrit Cole conspiracy theory I had, and giving a little credit to Anthony Volpe as well, talking about him on the back end. So far, I can classify this Yankees series in Anaheim as one, weird, and two, I hate it. The Yankees were, prior to last night, 2-9 in their last 11 in Anaheim. The Angels have been bad almost that entire time. They've been hot for maximum 1 month of every year under Shohei Ohtani, and the Yankees, I don't think, caught them during those months and still couldn't handle them. Some memorable losses, some late-night blown leads. Ohtani going yard against Michael King last year. Bottom line, no matter how bad the Angels are, they're always a terrible matchup for New York in this particular building. Even without Mike Trout on the shelf, even without Ohtani, the roster at its bleakest, and the Angels with Griffin Canning on the mound still managed to beat the Yankees in the first game of the set. Yankees couldn't manufacture runs, put guys on base, couldn't get them home, and then had a one-run lead blown on an Anthony Rizzo error and a two-run double by Taylor Ward in the eighth. Last night, one-run lead in the ninth. First and second, nobody out. Willie Calhoun, double play, grounder to third by Logan Ohapi. The Yankees win. Luis Gil's absolute gem, 2-1. But you might be asking, why didn't they win these games 8-3 and 9-1? Couldn't possibly tell you. Thankful to even get out of yesterday with a victory. Now they move into the third game of the series, trying to win the set. At least they're not trying to avoid a sweep. Anaheim is one of the worst places for this ball club to go. I'd rather be in San Francisco facing a much better team, facing a wild card contender. I enjoyed myself more in San Diego, also facing a much better team, facing a wild card contender.
Have you ever been to Anaheim?
I went for the 2014 playoffs, Mike Trout's only playoff series, and I saw it was a long game. I think it was game two of that series. Mike Moustakas homered in like the 13th, and a guy tried to fight us in like the eighth inning. Fight the whole section. Like, we weren't doing anything. He like stood up drunk and he was like, are you, and fuck you as well. And security came and got him. He was trying to fight the whole crowd. And security let him out. And we were like, man, that was weird. And then like 2 hours later, like eighth inning to the 13th, we left the game and he was waiting outside the gate. So, I hated my time in Anaheim as much as the Yankees did. But we've got one more game in this series. Can't wait till it's over, win or loss. These games just stink. Horrible energy yesterday. The Juan Soto interference call, as dumb a call as you'll see in Major League Baseball, would have been the dumbest call of the week if we hadn't seen the same thing called even worse in an even dumber way to end White Sox Orioles earlier in the week. So second dumbest call of the week. No slouch. Still really stupid. And they win the game because Verdugo goes yard, because Anthony Volpe has a triple and an error, Little League homer. Congrats to the New York Yankees on escaping a last-place team by the absolute skin of their teeth. One more on the horizon tonight. 9:40 start. Who's with me? Pitch clock helps. A 9:40 game yesterday ended at 12:04. So thank you, Rob Manfred. Still bad. Thomas Carinante, before we get into all this, you got an offer for everybody.
Sure do. What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in. DraftKings is here. You know what they're doing? They would be offering a no sweat bet sign-up bonus for new users. So new customers who sign up with our code YanksGoYard and deposit at least $5 will receive a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 bonus on their first wager. That means if you place a bet of $50, for example, and you lose, you'll receive $50 credit in bonus bets straight to your account, up to $1,500. You will also receive a one-game or I'm sorry, a one single game parlay reward every single day. Using our code YanksGoYard not only gets you these bonuses, but more importantly, it directly supports the podcast, YanksGoYard.com, your boys Adam and Thomas. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, or if you got any friends who are trying to get into the gambling game and want to pass the word on to them, make sure you and them use the code YanksGoYard to maximize that first bet. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember, always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Spoiler alert, you probably do.
I think you do. If you're using a burner to create a third, fourth, fifth account, then you don't. But otherwise, if you're are you 12?
Yeah, don't do that. Come on.
Are you 12? Like, then don't. Don't touch this. Come on.
My cousin is like 15, and he was telling me, like, there's this platform that some of his friends use. Yeah, I'm like, what is this? It's not DraftKings. It's something else. But it's like a real thing. I forget what it's called, but maybe we'll flame that on the pod for fostering underage gambling.
Yeah.
Gambling's bad.
Yeah.
But it's great.
But it's also great.
It's bad if you're, again, you have a gambling problem, call what you got to call. But if you're having fun and you're being responsible, it's a good time. Yeah. Just can't be exposing the young kids to it. That doesn't seem to make sense. Well, anyway.
You simply have to be eligible, which we simply must very be clear.
Yeah. We actually have that in the terms and conditions, just to make sure.
Oh, yeah.
We are subjecting the kids, though, however, to low-energy West Coast baseball.
And I find it to be low energy. I haven't enjoyed myself. That first loss, if not for the Rangers loss about an hour prior to the first loss, it would be like just one of the more predictable, no matter how bad the Angels are, feels like you're going to go to Anaheim, be in a one-run game late, have the skeleton crew members of the Yankees bullpen in to protect this tight lead. And there's no worse feeling these days for a Yankees fan than losing a game where you use Canely, Weaver, and Holmes. Because then you're like, well, shit. I mean, those are the only three people that we have. So who pitches tomorrow? The answer, I guess, is Luis Gil going eight innings. And then Holmes coming back and having a pretty efficient, if not still pretty scary, ninth inning. I mean, now you really got nobody. I guess you could use Canely and Weaver today. But I think the hopes would be, can we finally just bust out the bats? Can we win a game 10-3? Like, do we really have to be playing bullpen roulette? Because when you use all those guys in rapid succession and then you don't come home with a victory and you lose the game on as silly a thing as Anthony Rizzo fumbling and diving and grabbing a ball, fallacy of the predetermined outcome. I know, hey, maybe Taylor Ward jumped on the first pitch in the ninth and then we got a leadoff double. But you know what a leadoff double in the ninth isn't? A blown lead, because the leadoff guy was on second yesterday and Clay Holmes got out of it. So I think it's very fair to blame Rizzo for the loss, but more just blame the universe, because you're in that game going, this one doesn't feel good. I don't feel good about this. And then it ends bad.
Yeah, it's like this was a lot of what had happened in 2021 and last year.
Seeking losses, loss-seeking missile type of game. What can we do to lose? We did
it. Yeah, and like, in terms of sustaining yourself for the season, you can't be in this many close games.
No.
And you can't be in this many close games against bad teams. And look, not every night's going to go our way. It's a grind out there. You're on a West Coast road trip. It ain't easy, but like, you probably got to capitalize on Griffin Canning and his 5 ERA and his little fucking bullshit shenanigans running the pitch clock down every single time. Like, capitalize on that guy. Don't let that guy get out. He gave up 9 hits and 2 walks in 5 innings and only came out with 3 earned runs. That's a bit of an issue. But again, look, we're not going to cash in on every opportunity. I understand that. I'm not even mad about that loss. But yeah, the closer you keep these games against inferior pitching opponents, the greater likelihood you are to bullpen taxing and the game being that much more pressure-packed for those individuals who are already, you know, overused at this point. And the defense has to be absolutely clean throughout the entire 9 innings. And the Yankees haven't really had that as part of their DNA this year. It's improving. I certainly will say that. I think we've seen less defensive gaffes on the whole. I know we have Gleyber Torres' Sunday nonsense. I know we had Anthony Rizzo's nonsense the other day. But for the most part, outfield has been doing great. Volpe's been tremendous. Whoever's been at third has been very good. Behind the plate has been very good. So overall, can't complain. But you have that first loss, and it's like, and then last night, again, a win, a very good win, in my opinion. But
yeah,
you, once again, quiet, quiet offensive showing. Anthony Volpe's pretty much, you know, pulling his weight again, and everybody else is lagging behind. I know Judge and Soto walked twice each, but you go 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. You nearly blow 8 innings and 1 earned from Luis Gil. Again, another incredible. I mean, he's the AL Cy Young front runner. He is.
Should be.
He should be. Tyler Anderson, definitely a tough starter to go against, especially with the year he's having, but left-handed pitcher. Thought this was kind of our bread and butter, guys. So nonetheless, if they get out of a series win here, that I think that would be pretty massive. And you got to consider the cosmic factors, right? Anaheim's just a weird fucking place for us. It just is. I don't know if it's the low energy of like being in the suburbs in California. Being in the cities in California definitely like helps out with the buzz, but you go across the country, it's different vibes over there. It's dialed back. There's not as much, you know, pomp and circumstance. And now you're in, you know, suburbia. What county is it? Is it Orange County?
I believe so.
Or is it Los Angeles County? Why are they the Los Angeles Angels? Anyway,
their decision late in the game, it, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Not for me to know.
Smart, no. But just be the California Angels. That's so much cooler. It's a weird place for us, and we have to accept that for what it is. Like, just like how Oakland, weird place for us. It just doesn't matter how good or bad the A's are. We're going to lose one or two of those in just inexplicable fashion. But on the whole, there are more positives out of this, out of these first two games than anything. Like, what Anthony Volpe's doing is absolutely incredible. The starting pitching is still coming to play. Like, even Nestor's lack-ish luster, 5 1/3 innings, where he gave up 2 earned runs. I mean, the starting rotation continues that streak of starters giving up 2 or fewer earned runs with at least 5 innings pitched, which is unreal. Yeah, my beef here is like not ruling that Rizzo thing an error. That's I have the biggest problem with the umpires in this series. You don't rule Rizzo's thing an error, which, I mean, I understand he dove for it, but if you're just falling to your knees to field a ground ball, that's a standard play.
Come now.
And then you have the call against Soto last night, which nearly torpedoed the entire series, especially because they were about to really take advantage of Tyler Anderson in that first inning. But overall, just come out with a win today and I'll be happy.
Yeah, they needed a win so badly yesterday, as silly as that sounds, just to avoid a 3-game losing streak in California. Like, obviously that doesn't sound like the end of the world, but you're treading some dangerous territory if you blow yesterday's game, or if you load the bases with no outs in the first inning and don't score and then let that take you down along with it, the poor momentum there. The Yankees have never played well in Anaheim. It's true that 2009 versus today, obviously 2009, the Angels were much better. They faced off the A's in the ALCS that year, so it's not like that's some pansy version of the Angels team. But the worst Yankee series of that year, I would say, was at Anaheim pretty profoundly. A Friday through Sunday in July, right before the All-Star break, they lose those games 10-6. Hold on, I just had it. 10-6, 14-8, and 5-4. In the 10-6 game, they have a 4-0 lead. That goes away in the middle innings. It becomes a 5-1 lead in the fifth. It's tied by the end of the fifth. And then the Angels run away. The winning pitcher, of course, Jason Bulger. Duh. Then go ahead and grab that 4-0 lead again the next night. 4-0 into the bottom of the fourth, becomes 4-1, becomes 8-4 Angels by the end of the fifth. The fifth inning, both times, Jared Weaver beats Andy Pettit. Final game of that series, Yanks are up 1-0, down 4-1 in bottom of the fourth, 4-2, 5-2, 5-4 in the top of the eighth. Here's how the top of the eighth went. How do you get to 5-4 and still be disappointed? Hideki Matsui, down 5-2, Justin Spire on the mound, replacing John Lackey. Walk, Single. Hit by pitch. The bases are loaded. Nobody out. Single. One run scores. Bases are still loaded with nobody out. It's 5-3. Jorge Posada. Darren Oliver comes in to face Jorge Posada. Sack fly. Okay, fine. It's 5-4. Two guys on. Nick Swisher comes up. Line drive, double play. Melky out at first.
Oh, come on, man.
5-4. We go to the ninth. 1-2-3 inning by Brian Fuentes. We lose this series. But I remember very specifically they had runners on all day.
Brian Fuentes.
Runners on all day. Couldn't cash him in. And, again, that just ends with runners all over the bags. The bases loaded, nobody out, losing by one. So, memorable bad series. This one, they saved themselves the sweep. And, of course, you'll remember last year in Anaheim with Carlos Rodon blowing kisses to the crowd.
Yeah.
It was probably the moment that season right after the Rockies series, too, where you were just like,
the Rockies here. Why? Shut up, dude. Why are we talking about this?
The team just ain't got it. 2023 Yankees. I mean, let's talk about the truths and the lies that we've learned, though, in recent weeks from this year's team. Because Anthony Rizzo is a big part of that. The poor play in the opener, the offense has matched his poor defense. He's been getting a pass because A, he's the fan favorite, and B, the team is 38-19. So it's very hard to say. This is the toughest part. So the truth and the lie go hand in hand. The truth is that Anthony Rizzo probably has to be reevaluated at this point in time.
You think so?
Bat speed in the eighth percentile. Oh. All of the offensive numbers trending remarkably downward. Barrel percentage, hard hit, everything is under 30 percentile except for the batting average, expected batting average in the 38th percentile. He doesn't whiff. He doesn't K. He does chase, and he can't hit. And the defense has been an issue whether the official scorer wants to take errors and put them on the board or take them off the board. He hit seventh yesterday, and the Yankees are acknowledging that his 677 OPS is not good enough. That said, the lie for me is that, oh, this is easy. Like, just call up Ben Rice. Right from AA, Dartmouth, 12th round pick. I understand that fans can fall more in love with a prospect than the team, and they could ignore the realism of the pedigree. Like, a fan could just look at what Ben Rice is doing offensively and be like, put him in. This is easy. Put the AA first baseman in there. It's simple. And would he outperform Anthony Rizzo immediately at first blush? Sure. It's possible. I can't rule it out. Rizzo's been the worst regular outside of Gleyber Torres on the current New York Yankees roster. But when is the last time that a contender, a 38-19 team leading the powerhouse AL East going into the midsummer, when the trade deadline's coming up and you can retool and you can make changes, when is the last time that a bona fide contender just replaced their veteran former all-star first baseman with a 12th round pick and said, we did it. We upgrade. We changed the lineup. We brought up a guy who's the 12th in our top 30 who hasn't sniffed AAA yet. And yeah, we scanned the Savant pages and he's in there. Like, it's just his most realistic path to playing time is not showing up in the middle of the summer this year. Ben Rice. I have faith in Ben Rice. I'm intrigued by Ben Rice. His most realistic path to long-term playing time with the Yankees is not showing up on July 8th and supplanting Anthony Rizzo as a starting first baseman down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. Do we think he needs to be reevaluated, though? I mean, I don't disagree. That could always help because that, again, it was not deemed a concussion. Remember, it was cognitive impairment. So yes. That is much more a little bit concerning in terms of, like, all right, is there actually something wrong with my brain? But for me, like, I think this is just the natural progression of how Anthony Rizzo's career is going. Like, he hasn't been the same player he was since 2019, or I'm sorry, since the start of 2020. And that is just simply because he's getting older. And I don't really think it's crazy to say that the regression might be hitting him a little bit more extremely, kind of like what we saw with Josh Donaldson, right? Like, Josh Donaldson came here. Gio Urshela, you know, was no Josh Donaldson. And we knew that we knew that for sure. Yep. But he was coming off a great season with the Twins. Then he comes to New York and just like that, it's all gone. And we don't really know what had happened there. Obviously, the Tim Anderson conflict, I think, messed with his head. You have a few injuries in there that messed with his consistency, but he's always kind of been injured. For Rizzo, I was never really confident in him maintaining whatever. I always viewed him as an additive, like, good veteran piece. When we traded for him in 2021, it was really cool because we essentially stole him from the Red Sox and added a competent lefty bat to a lineup that was filled with a ton of struggling lefties or didn't have enough lefties. And Rizzo's done a great job of capitalizing on the short porch, and he's actually been a solid situational hitter for this team. But on the whole, you're right. Like, there is something up here, but I'm not sure. He's had a lot of rest, and we saw him kind of at his peak powers in spring training. And I know it's not the same as everyday MLB reps, but I just think the game's catching up to him. And to me, it's been semi-obvious for three, four years now that he's just not the same intimidating plate presence that he was with the Cubs. I'll even raise another argument here. In 2022, he was bad on defense, and that was his last full season because he obviously missed, 63 games of 2023 with his head injury. He was good in 2021 on defense and 2020, but we started to see the decline in that full season on the defensive end on 2022. And really, all of his numbers since 2019, like, where we're seeing this blue on the Savant page with barrel percentage, hard hit, chase rate, like, that really has all been the same or slowly getting worse over time. So just don't think he's that great anymore. Yeah. And I think that that's the reality. We have to, again, you know, we'd love a replacement, but, the Yankees, I don't understand paying him the amount of money that we did, especially after 2021, where it was like, do we need to keep Anthony Rizzo? I mean, he was good. He was definitely like a piece that we could have moved forward with, but like, you pass on Freddie Freeman, you pass on Matt Olson, you pass on all these other guys, and it's like, and you're just gonna shell out $60 million for Anthony Rizzo over 3 years? I don't know.
And then you trade everyone you would have traded for Matt Olson for Frankie Montas.
Yeah, it's like, Basically. That's where the problems lie. Like, again, Anthony Rizzo, good guy, taking accountability in the post game for that misplay that he deemed a misplay himself. And I know that he's hard on himself. We all know that. Like, he's very vocal about the expectations and the pressure and all that stuff. But like, it's just not there. I don't know if it's going to come back.
No, I think he's a great guy. I think he's been nothing but a great guy on this team. And I would hold it in tandem with, it would be an outright shocking move for the Yankees to midstream just be like, we've lost faith in Anthony Rizzo. He's not our guy anymore. I would compare it to Hanley Ramirez of the 2018 Red Sox. When the Red Sox started off record-setting fashion, Hanley at DH was hitting 250 with a 708 OPS, down from a 95 OPS plus the year before, down to 90 midway through 2018. 2016, he was like one of their most important hitters other than Poppy at a 126 OPS plus. He was just nasty at DH. 2017 dropped off, but still felt like a threat. 2018, I still considered him integral to the Red Sox, and there was some rumor that they were going to dump him. And I was like, that would make legit no sense. It would be almost impossible at this juncture, like, to just take a winning piece and someone who like ran out during the DS the year before with a Believe in Boston flag. You take him off this team in May. And what do? They cut him after 44 games. He played 16 more games in Major League Baseball with Cleveland the next year. So it would be akin to that. It would shock me if the Yankees moved off of Anthony Rizzo at this point, but they do have to consider it given the importance of the position. And some of that we'll probably discuss positional switches when we talk about Jason Dominguez, but I want to give the starting rotation credit first.
Yeah.
My truth here is that this is now becoming historic. The rotation is historically special. That's an abject truth. We're at 16 games now. a 16-game streak of 5-plus, 2 earned runs or fewer, and like we have not seen this from a rotation since 1893, we're done saying, hey, the Yankees might be finding something here. Hey, the Yankees might be tripping into some rotation. Good for them patching up the rotation without Gerrit Cole. No, this is an historically good rotation. That may see regression at various blips and points in the year, but this is an historically good rotation. Now, the lie that the rotation doesn't still need reinforcements. Like, we don't need Gerrit Cole. We're going to be talking about that. We don't need to be shopping at the trade deadline for a veteran who could just soak up innings. No, we absolutely do need to be looking out for that kind of guy. And maybe that's just finding room for Cody Poteet as a swingman and a sixth starter on occasion. I'm team six-man rotation if and when Cole returns. There's nobody I want to pull. We talked about pulling Nestor last time. I still think that's the most likely name to pull. And he's not getting a playoff start. So
maybe at home.
Maybe at home, but I still feel like Nestor is more valuable in the postseason as a three-inning swingman or someone who could pick up for someone like quick trigger. Two on, two out. It's a 2-0 game in the second inning. We got to pull somebody. Let's pull Nestor and get the second, third, fourth, and fifth inning out of him. I would go with a six-man rotation all summer, and I would continue eyeing trade deadline additions. Yeah. And I would undoubtedly beef up the bullpen. Because like we said earlier, there's like three guys out there that you trust, and maybe Scott Efros helps, and maybe Lou Trevino helps, but front office help, please. But don't neglect the rotation just because of this historic stretch, because you have faith in Gerrit Cole, because you know you got to do bullpen work. You literally can never have enough pitching. It should always be said. It's so trite and you know, such a cliche, but historically good rotation, astoundingly good stretch in May. We may never see this again. We haven't seen it since 1893. And instead of banking on 1893-style history recurring in the second half, let's make sure we get some more arms to keep these guys fresh for the postseason.
Yeah, fun fact, they were also throwing like underarm in 1893. So,
yeah.
With a 10-pound ball.
And some of the games were against local pharmacists, and some were major league games, but others were – sometimes they forgot the ball, and they used hard mud. Like,
so put that in a context. Like, they were tossing a bowling ball from the pitching mound to the batter's box, and they were trying to hit the ball with a broomstick, and that's really – that's the last time hitters have been this ineffective against a starting rotation. That's just history for you. I'm just going back and I'm looking at how this game was played back in the 1800s, and that was it, I think. What do I think about this rotation? Why is it – remember the Red Sox thought they had the best starting rotation?
I do.
That was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Cutter Crawford now is like two of the worst starts you'll ever see back-to-back. But that's enough. We don't have to talk about the Red Sox.
No,
I am.
Let's talk about the 2023 Yankees blowing games in Colorado again.
I am actually very, 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 like, I am over the moon about this starting rotation. And I know that sometimes those emotions from me don't come out on the podcast, but you don't see me pregame. You don't see me when I'm in my routine. I have not been worried about this starting rotation. Like, you remember last year, right? Every time Carlos Rodon took the mound, you're like, oh man, I just need him. I need him to have a nice, like a solid game. That's all I need. I can't have a blow up. Can't have anything that's going to be making negative headlines just for my own mental health. And I'm sure for Carlos's mental health, more importantly, we just need like 5 innings, 3 earned, get out of there. Like just that's all we need. Now at this point, I have lost track who is starting. Get last year, I was hawking the schedule. Oh shit, who's starting tomorrow? Gotta know. And I stopped that this year. This year I'm living game by game. I'm not worried about who we're playing until the next day. I'm not worried about who's starting until after the game is over. Like, I have no concerns over who is taking the mound, the starting road. That's how confident I am in this group of guys. And the biggest reason why is because this resilience that we've seen without Gerrit Cole. I know it's probably been overstated at this point, but the fact that they've been able to pull off what they have without arguably top three starter in the league, I think that's fair to say. I'm not calling the best. I know he won the Cy Young, but there are pitchers out there who have, who might be considered more valuable on a year-to-year basis.
Still top tier. You don't want to live without him.
Upper echelon, Gerrit Cole, a necessity for this team if there is going to be a World Series run, but maybe not. I don't know what this, if this rotation holds up the way it does, like Gerrit Cole could just be a fun bonus. So yeah, this is a truth. The fact that Luis Gil is getting better every start, you know, he'll follow up like six shutout innings with, or six innings, one earned, but six shutout innings, 14 strikeouts. And then he'll give you eight innings of one earned ball and put you in a position to win the game and save the bullpen after a night where you use your three best guys. So this shit is no joke. And I will say that I am leaning toward a six man just because why? Carlos Rodon hasn't had a full season in a year and change. Marcus Stroman, we talked about his struggles to stay healthy. Hey, I'm staying health. His ability to stay healthy consistently has been a bit of a problem. He's I'd say a 125 inning a year guy. Clark Schmidt, career highs in everything last year, workload. Nestor Cortez coming off a shoulder injury, also career high in innings pitch was what, 100 and change?
Coming off two shoulder injuries too last year. He shoulder injury, comes back, has his best start of the year. It was so good that it injured his shoulder again, and now he's out again. So I didn't know what we were going to get from him this year. Pleasantly surprised, doesn't even begin to cover it. He's had a couple off starts, all of them on the road, and at home he's a legitimate, he's back to being a weapon. Yeah. So, I mean, who's your worst starter?
Exactly. He's probably the worst, and that's not a dig. It's just like, you look at who's been giving length, who's been getting more strikeouts, who's been more reliable all around. Like, he's still great. I'll take him on my team in my rotation any day of the week. I want him here. I love him. But going to a six man, you consider all these factors, plus Gerrit Cole coming off an elbow injury, where I think there's going to be a lot of uncertainty with that. Some insiders have went as far to believe that he might not return this season earlier in the year because there's so much uncertainty with elbow injuries. And it's like, all right, we know there's uncertainty, but let's chill out here. But yeah, going to the sixth man might be the move. And then when you hit the postseason, you have the luxury of having five full-time starters who have had a little bit of their workload eaten into by this support system. And then you have what you really do need when the postseason comes along, two very, very good multi-inning bullpen guys. Luke Weaver will be one. Whoever gets bumped into the bullpen between Nestor Cortez and Clark Schmidt, I really still don't think – oh, yeah, Luis Gil, rookie, again, coming off Tommy John surgery, probably needs his workload dialed back a bit as the year goes on. So, like, I don't know who goes to the bullpen, but either way – that gives us a full rotation, assuming there's no more funny business with injuries, and you get two absolute weapons out of the bullpen, which most teams don't have. But then it goes to the lie, right? Need to bolster or the rotation or the pitching staff doesn't need reinforcements. As constructed right now, if everything were to go smoothly, sure, doesn't need reinforcements, right? But guess what? Can't really bank on that. You have to consider workloads here. You have to consider bullpen health here overall. Like, kind of like how I talked about DJ LeMahieu earlier in the year, I'm simply just not factoring in Scott Efros and Lou Trevino into my plans.
That's just me.
I don't know what anybody else is doing. I am not doing it. It's a fool's errand to do so. So you look at the rotation, and do they need another starter at the trade deadline? I wouldn't say that that's an absolute necessity. I think you need to get Gerrit Cole back to see where he is before making that decision. But to just blanket state right now that this doesn't need any reinforcements would indeed be a gigantic lie. So I'm looking forward to how this team adapts and kind of changes their methodology when Gerrit Cole returns. And then that'll give us a clear focus on what we're going to do with the trade deadline.
Yeah. And like, probably don't get involved in the top of the trade market. Don't go spend assets.
Absolutely not.
Use Lizardo, but don't enter the trade deadline telling teams and giving the signals like, hey, we're good on the rotation. Actually, we're fine with we love Will Warren at his 7.9 ERA. Like, if something presents itself, go ahead and chase it. Maybe it bumps Nestor down to the bullpen. Maybe this new addition, we'll be able to cover multiple innings in the bullpen. I don't know. Just don't rule anything out. Although bullpen, obviously, top priority. we have three guys I trust right now and they all appear in the same game and then they can't all appear in the next game and it turns the next game into roulette in the late innings.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I do feel like now's a good time to mention my spicy conspiracy because spicy. I don't think that this is a legitimate, this isn't a legitimate thought that a smart guy would have. This is the kind of thought that a dumb guy would have. I'm saying that right now, right?
I wouldn't say dumb. I would just say unwell.
Yeah. Well, way too fiscally responsible, like looking for misguided inroads into fiscal responsibility. But Hausheimer is going to have to prove to us this offseason that he's still got that dog in him, right? He closed the Aaron Judge deal. Is he going to close the Juan Soto deal? Can he close the Juan Soto deal, lower the payroll, but then still meaningfully compete next year? That's the question he has to answer. Because Michael Kay took aim at his interview where he said this is an unsustainable payroll and basically said it's true. That's how he thinks. He doesn't think this is a sustainable payroll. Okay, great. So the payroll is going down. And he has every intention of bringing back Juan Soto. Maybe now's a good time for the Mets corner too. Let's brief check in on the New York Mets, see where they're at in terms of their Juan Soto pursuit. Oh, they've got relievers throwing gloves at the crowd and saying that this is the worst fucking team in the world. Or maybe they're saying that they're the worst fucking teammate on the worst fucking team in the world. But either way, relievers getting released, team falling apart, last place, no prospect pipeline, another big black sour cloud floating over Queens at this point. Ken Rosenthal got on the Foul Territory podcast today and they were asked about, Scott Braun asked Rosenthal about Juan Soto and the Mets. Rosenthal said, quote, why would he go there? So that's where we're at. That's where we're at on Juan Soto and the Mets in general. So I would say the Yankees are the front runner for Hood Services. John Heyman actually said the same thing on his live stream yesterday. Good for the Yankees, but that does mean the payroll is going down. How far down? Anthony Rizzo, Clay Holmes, Gleyber Torres, probably Alex Verdugo, likely some side pieces and relievers and non-tenders, etc. But what if Hal Steinbrenner watched this historic rotation put up a stretch unlike any Major League Baseball has seen since 1893 without Gerrit Cole and said, if he opts out, why am I giving a pitching coach a $36 million tip for next year and beyond and adding an extra year onto his contract? Just remind me why I'm doing that. Cause didn't we just put up a stretch in 16 games better than any stretch that Gerrit Cole has ever participated in? So with a chance to lower my payroll by $36 million next year, I'm going to give that money instead to Cole in perpetuity through the age of 39. Are we sure? Again, this is a dumb guy's bad idea. When presented with the opportunity to pay Gerrit Cole and Juan Soto, you pay Gerrit Cole and Juan Soto. This stretch is so historically good that it's also unsustainably good. Who am I banking on moving forward? Cole over every option in the current rotation, including Luis Gil. Because Luis Gil's numbers, they've happened. This really happened. But 29 hits in 63 and a third innings, 31 walks in those 63 and a third innings. I don't think that guy's ERA is sticking at 1.99 very long. And the whip below one with all those walks. Best 11-start stretch you could imagine out of Heel, but I'm still taking Gerrit Cole moving forward. I don't think the Yankees can even consider this, but I worry that Hal Steinbrenner might, especially considering how dedicated he is to trimming that payroll. And you know who can change this and turn this from a dumb conspiracy to just like the dumbest thing ever said on a podcast? Cole could come back this summer and lead this team to a World Series and be the most essential part of a huge run and be the cog. Like, if they're going to win the World Series, it'll be because they outpitched everybody and Cole could be the leader in that department. But we'll see what happens down the stretch. This could get more interesting than anybody really wants it to.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand this. Understand the thought process because I am partially unwell too. The only thing that I can see here is if Cole were to get injured again after he comes back, knocking on everything. But yeah, if that happens, the Yankees would have the incentive to not tack on that extra year. But then again, does Cole opt out of his deal if he has an elbow issue that's taking him out for next season or at least a portion of next season or whatnot. Like, I don't think the Yankees are dumb enough. And because if even if you look at it, like if they tack another year onto his deal, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 5 more years of Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole is coming off a Cy Young campaign in his age 32 season. Like, you still, out of those 5 years, you got 3 really fucking good ones left. So even it, even though the price tag is in theory high, I think it's right in line with the market. And the other issue is like, who are you subbing Gerrit Cole out for? Like, I know there's actually a decent amount of starting pitchers on the market, but you're going to restart a new contract with somebody who's approaching that same age area, you know, like the problematic 29 to 30 range where you're giving out another 7-year contract. Like, wouldn't you rather just have Cole for another 5 years? You know, that's my thought process. And with the way that Hal Steinbrenner has treated these public Juan Soto talks, like, I don't think it would fly in Soto's world if the Yankees were to get rid of, in theory, their best pitcher. That would be a big turnoff to him in the negotiations. Then again, I think if the Yankees were to offer the most money in a hypothetical contract for Juan Soto, I don't think Juan Soto would really give a shit what the roster looked like at that point. I think he would know he would have a very good setting where he's going to be supported by, you know, requisite talent, and he's also going to have the legacy thing behind him with the historic franchise. But I guess we can't put this, we can't put it past anybody in this day and age. That said, I can safely say that Anthony Rizzo gone next year, that frees up $11 million. Gleyber Torres gone next year, $14 million. Mm-hmm. And then you have, if DJ does not improve, you can definitely find another team to take on a portion of his remaining $30 million over the next 2 years. And that could free up another, you know, if the Yankees eat 8 of that, I think a team would take him for 2 years, 22, as a utility infielder with a solid bat and veteran presence that could help the younger guys. So you're talking about freeing up, you know, right there, that's $35 million. That's one Cole salary that pays for it.
Yeah. Again, there's no reason that this should happen. There's no good reason that this should happen. But if we're going to have the opt-out conversation anyway, you might as well have it now while the owner is walking around flaunting about payroll reduction. I tell you, if he brought in some sort of newfangled consultant who wanted to disrupt the baseball payroll industry, that guy would be like, are you really going to be look at what the rotation did without Gerrit Cole. You sure you want to pay him as an older man when you could just stop paying him immediately? Oh, my gosh. In the name of efficiency, let me go cut this man. I don't think it's going to happen. I just want to say it out loud so that maybe it doesn't happen. So you listen to this podcast and send it to Hal Steinbrenner and go, hey, man, don't do this. Really dumb. Yeah. Don't do this. Well, Cole returning will probably create a logjam in the rotation and maybe six-man questions and maybe bullpen questions. Also returning and creating a conversation is Jason Dominguez, mm-hmm. who is the final truth and lie. Truth, the best Yankees roster in the second half includes this man, includes Jason Dominguez. And if he's already playing center field, which he is as of yesterday in his first rehab stint in center field, and if he's got an 879 OPS and 2 bombs hitting 317 with a 391 OBP at the age of 21, no need to delay the inevitable. We got to find room for him. We just do. And the lie, of course, is that he would not find playing time. Hey, guess what? Find it for him. Aaron Judge doesn't need to be playing every single day. Aaron Judge doesn't need to be playing center field every single day. All these guys can use breathers, but especially Judge. No. Dominguez should not be arriving on the same schedule as Trent Grisham and his 50 ABs all year. That won't work. But did you really expect this much from Giancarlo Stanton? Haven't we already gotten maybe more than we expected all year from Giancarlo Stanton? Let's either keep him fresh or use Dominguez to allow us to push some Stanton reps out later in the year. Let's give Soto a DH day and put Judge in right. There are plenty of people who could benefit from Dominguez moving around. It may change the lineup a bit. There might be a little less consistency. Everybody hates that. But you know what? We hate it a lot more when it's Willie Calhoun and Billy McKinney and Trent Grisham types forcing their way into the lineup than we do when it's, hey, get this superstar who's 21 years old some ABs. So not yet, but 2 weeks from now, if this continues, you're going to have to call them up and you're going to have to get these guys off their feet a little bit. Hopefully everyone stays healthy until then. We want this to be a tough decision, not an easy one, but he's pretty close and it's May 30th. So we might've been expecting this conversation in mid to late July, more like early June.
More like early June. I mean, I'm looking at mid-June. Why not mid-June? He's at double A right now. He's getting the bump to triple A. His last two games were in the outfield, and I don't know if there was ever a definitive timeline for him to actually play defense. Remember?
Yeah.
It was like, oh, yeah, the first few weeks he's going to be DHing. He's 11 games in, and he's already playing defense.
Yeah.
Not only that, but – you get so what has spurred this conversation, right? Brian Hoke reported yesterday or 2 days ago that it's going to be several weeks before there is a consideration for Jason Dominguez coming to the big league roster. Now, is it smart for the Yankees to be careful here? Hey, let's give him the proper time. He missed all spring training. Hey. Needs those reps before he gets to the big leagues. Like, why rush? No need to rush. We're in a good spot right now. We got a really good outfield right now. We actually have a decent amount of lefty hitters pulling their weight. So let's chill. Flip side of that is, again, what more do you need to see from Jason Dominguez? And this was the case last year, right? He came up last year for that 8-game stretch and was incredible. And that was after he logged an underwhelming season at double A. He got the bump to triple A for 9 games. He was tearing the cover off the ball. Actually, he didn't even hit a home run. I didn't know that. 9 games, he batted .419 with a 1.094 OPS, 10 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. Then he got the call up to the bigs. That call up to the bigs was more of the roster needed a shift, and it didn't matter who was next in line. Somebody was getting the call. The Yankees were cleaning house, losing season, bad year. Let's figure out – it wasn't a losing season, but it felt like a losing season. Bad year. Let's just get new blood in here and see what we got. Then he comes and tears the cover off the ball with the big league roster. I understand the 8-game sample size at the big league level was small, but – I don't know what more else you need to see from Jason Dominguez at the minor league level, especially because he's kind of plateaued at the minor league level. I've said this before, and I think there's validity to it. I think he just rises to the occasion when the spotlight gets brighter. There are players like that. This guy does not want to fucking be in Somerset, New Jersey playing baseball. He does not want to be in Scranton, Pennsylvania playing baseball. And yeah. I know that there is a protocol here, and I know that I know nothing about it. But if the Yankees are sitting here in 2 weeks and Jason Dominguez has, what does he have right now? A .317 average with an .879 OPS, 2 homers, 6 RBIs in 11 games. If he's able to replicate that across another 10 to 15 games at AAA, there is no reason for him to be there longer than mid-June. There is simply no other reason. He is showing you everything that he could possibly do. He's showing it in full game speed reps. He's showing you that there is consistency and progression across each level of the minor leagues. The next step for this guy is Major League Baseball. We thought that was the case after getting a glimpse of him last year and how he was able to adapt to the big leagues, how he was able to absorb all that pressure kind of seamlessly and not really be concerned with it. He was great with the media. He was already connecting with his teammates. You could see the joy and emotion on his face. Like, this is a situation where the Yankees just can't be delaying the inevitable. Jason Dominguez looks like he's going to be – I'm not saying he's ready right now. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it is not going to, if he's on this current trajectory, there is no reason it should take more than 2 weeks from this point forward. No reason.
No, agreed. And this is also where the weird conversation comes in. Look, it's not going to happen this year, But I also do want this on the podcast because I wanted to, I want everybody to look back on May 30th and look be like, back. whoa, May 30th, they were on that?
Totally, dude.
I don't think Anthony Rizzo is getting replaced by Ben Rice. Would Anthony Rizzo consent to being replaced by Aaron Judge at first base? Because if we've got Dominguez and he needs to play every day and he proves he needs to play every day, we've got Juan Soto in right field, we've got Verdugo in left, we got Stan at DH, and Rizzo at DH sometimes, and Judge at DH on occasion, and LeMahieu at first base occasionally. But what if Aaron Judge could slot into first base in a lineup like that if everyone stays healthy and if Rizzo gets some time? Rizzo gets some time.
What's the outfield? What's the outfield? Are you talking about this year?
Yeah, Soto, Dominguez, Verdugo this year. Yeah, Soto, Dominguez, Verdugo this summer.
Yeah, we just get a new first baseman next year?
Yeah.
I like that. Has Judge's practice at first base, right?
He took reps in front of cameras in February 2023, which means he probably is doing it behind the scenes too. But on a backfield at spring training, he did put the glove on. He did play first. Is he a defensive upgrade over Anthony Rizzo right now? Is the risk of putting him in the infield, like, is it more of an injury risk to put him in the infield in an unfamiliar position rather than have him roaming center field, tiring his legs out? I don't know, but either way, get him off his legs in center field. Come on, please. He's got to be DHing more down the stretch. He and Dominguez should be trading off DH center field days.
Yeah, that's actually really cool.
Yeah.
I'd support that.
And Stan, I mean, you hope he's healthy. You don't want the issue to be like, well, he's not. So here comes Dominguez. And then when Stan does come back, like, they'd Ellsbury him in that scenario. They'd be like, oh, Stan came down with whooping cough. Like, give me another month as long as everybody performs here. I don't know. I mean, he complicates everything here. But shout out to what he's given them already so far this year and more than we ever could have expected.
Yeah. And look, it's not, I know we talk about this every time. This team does not need all stars at every position performing to their utmost abilities in order to win a World Series. But there are exceptions, right? The two worst hitters in this lineup right now, in terms of everyday players and even in terms of like utility, Anthony Rizzo and Gleyber Torres. At this point, argue with me until the death. Like, I think Oswaldo Cabrera is a better fit because he is somebody who gets hits in big spots and makes a lot of contact and is a good threat on the base paths. That's what I value at the bottom of the lineup or towards the bottom of the lineup. Anthony Rizzo and Gleyber Torres are surrounded by the most talented group of hitters they ever have been surrounded by, and they're experiencing arguably career worst numbers through the first 2 months of the season. Is that right for Rizzo? Yeah, Rizzo's on track for career worst almost everything. Gleyber Torres is, I mean, 220, everyone, yeah, you know, keep telling me about how his last 10 days look. 227 with a 631 OPS and an 81 OPS plus. Like, he's slugging 324. I don't know what's wrong. I want him to get better. I want Rizzo to be better, but those are two like longtime veterans that don't need to be occupying roster spot or everyday rep spots in the beginning of August if this is going to continue. Look, they got 2 months to turn it around, in my opinion. I think that's the timeline. You got 2 months to start the season. Now you got another 2 months to turn around. If Gleyber and Anthony Rizzo can figure it out and get on a more consistent path to producing offensively and to limiting errors in the field. Like, what was the stat? Rizzo has the same amount of errors in 55 games this year than he did in 95 last year.
And the official score keeps taking him away. Yeah, so he's changing the narrative there.
The same thing for Gleyber. Gleyber leads all second basemen in errors, and he's gotten a couple errors wiped off the board because umpires are apparently brain dead now. So that's the right side of your infield. The right side of your infield is lackluster defensively and is not producing offensively. I don't think those players need to be replaced on an everyday basis, but I think there does need to be some sort of a lineup reconfiguration or a shakeup of sorts. If you're going to introduce Judge to the infield, if you're going to move some pieces around, that would make this team better. But trotting Gleyber Torres out there for he has still played in every single game this season. He has played in all 57 games. I don't understand the need for that. Anthony Rizzo has played in 56 games. Both of these guys have had ample opportunity to turn it around, to fix themselves. They haven't. They still have another month and a half, 2 months left. Needs to be figured out. That's all I'm saying.
Fix it. Good luck.
I love you.
Fix it. We love you so much.
I do. I do.
That's true. Well, I mean, look, we'll sign off with a tribute to someone who has fixed it. One of the best
guys. One of the best guys around.
What murder? Top 10 player in baseball, only murdering opposing pitchers right now, Anthony Volpe. And look, it's a crowded field. It's going to be tough for Volpe to make the All-Star team. They are going to default to Witt. They're going to default to Gunnar Henderson. Are we taking three shortstops? Are we taking a veteran at this point? What are we doing? A lot of Yankees are going to make the team. He's going to have to make himself indelible and essential to make this All-Star roster. But guess what? It's his second year. He doesn't really have to. He doesn't have to be on the All-Star team to be notable.
Yeah.
288, 2.7 BWAR right now, 126 OPS plus, OPS up to 800 after last night, and that doesn't include the defense. The WAR does. But the 21-game hitting streak, the defense that he has managed to put up on the board, the play he made yesterday was just like, and of course he did that from the other side of the bag, diving through the infield. His range, 99th percentile. The people that said he didn't have the arm strength to compete at the major league level at shortstop, the arm strength hasn't really been there this year, and the range has been so spectacular that he is still in the 97th percentile overall in fielding run value. It's hard to be much better than Anthony Volpe has been year over year, and there's still room for improvement. He might end up being long-term one of those Luis Arraez guys where very intelligent people look at the Savant page and are like, don't like the expected slug. X-Volpe not doing it for me. And then he's hitting 290 with a 130 OPS plus and flashing excellent plus glove, plus defense, all-star caliber. We really do have the chance to have the next Jeter here in the fact that he is a remarkable contributor, contributes to winning, plays winning baseball, puts up exceptional counting numbers, and still has people going, I don't like what I see on this piece of paper, so I guess he's bad. He's overrated. Anthony Volpe, all the love in the world for your season year over year. And the Bobby Witt improvement plan that people were pitching last year doesn't seem quite so ridiculous now, does it? And look at Witt's doing in year three. So it only makes it more exciting.
He's been good?
He's been fantastic.
Oh, good. Cool.
He is currently apparently
out of the loop with like the Royals and there's like one other team out there.
He's hitting 307 with a 910 OPS, 9 homers, 38 ribs, 16 steals. Sick. So there you go.
That's sick.
He's 23.
Pretty sexy.
3.5 BWAR for Bobby Witt Jr.
Wow. Volpe is just deserves recognition, and I think perhaps a little bit more than he's been getting, and that might be my Yankees exceptionalism talking, but you have to also consider that he's setting the table for this superstar lineup. And he's been doing a really good job of it, breaking out of that 20-game slump after being moved to the leadoff spot. This 21-game hit streak now is incredible. The numbers are all boosted to the point where we can now accept his OBP as sufficient. Last year we were like, well, you know, the OBP is like almost 100 points higher than the average, but the average is 200. I don't know if I like that. And he is really, really utilizing his speed on the base paths this year. He's aggressive when he hits balls into the outfield. He's stretching doubles into triples. He's trying to be aggressive when he's turning at first base. And his just overall aggression at the plate is cool. Like even last night, he was in that 0-2 count and he sent that ball to the warning track. Like the fact that he was able to get on top of a pitch like that when he was, you know, back against the wall, 0-2 count was impressive for me. It was an out, but it was really good contact on the pitch and it was really good power on the pitch. It was deepest part of right field. And the defense, like, remember we were like, this guy won a gold glove last year? How did that happen? Like, what is the voting process? We question the WAR because it's like, you know, we've seen a lot of mistakes on his end that cost the team runs and cost the team wins at times. Like, how do we calculate WAR? Can someone show me the thing? Because in my stupid – you want to talk about stupid. In my opinion, if you hit a walk-off hit, you have one WAR now. You won a game. That's one war. Thank you. And then I don't know. So like, I don't know what goes into it. That's why I use the advanced metrics with a grain of salt. But his defense, sterling, the arm issues, like everybody seemed to have complained about or to try and point out to bring him down a notch. I mean, he's been as accurate as he could possibly. Yeah, we had a couple errors in that first month of the season where it was like, uh-oh, what's happening here? But he's cleaned it up. His range is incredible. He's on target to first base. If he can't make the throw on a fly, he's dotting it in there on a one-hopper. So the progress this kid has made, absolutely unbelievable. Hope it sticks, but at least on this streak, this current streak right now deserves a lot of attention.
Yep. And hopefully we get to keep saying this because it feels like he just like he takes care of the hitting streak immediately. And he has a couple of hitless ABs and he picks up another big hit late in the game. Like the last 10 games, this 21 game hitting streak, it felt almost identical the whole time. So shout out to someone who I publicly doubted a lot last year and have a lot more faith in now than I did last season. And it's just the beginning and they should consider while they're doing their budgetary, you know, reading Hal Steinbrenner's contract to-do list in Wingdings this offseason. Maybe think about an early extension for Anthony Volpe because that could save you money down the line as well. And you're calling up some more pieces from the farm this next year. Well, shout out to the New York Yankees. We'll not get swept in Anaheim. We don't know how the series turns out. We will by next week's show, though, when we see you again on Monday, 2:00 Eastern, as always on this stream and on all podcast platforms in the wake of streaming. I'm Adam Weinrub. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Weinrub, Thomas Carinante. Where can the people find you?
I'm at Tommy's _ takes. We are at officially Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at Yanks Go Yard FS. Code for DraftKings promo, Yanks Go Yard. Pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. Head on over to yanksgoyard.com. A lot of content there for you. Thank you guys for reading. We're having a great time. Just staying up to date with Yankees news, coming up with some cool scenarios, making you think. That's what we do. We really make you think. I am going to write a dissertation on why war should be calculated in the way that I had just suggested.
Uh-oh.
If you get a game-winning hit, you now have one war. If you make a game-losing error, you now have negative one war. I think it's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
Sound off in the comments if you disagree or if you're really good at math. I'd like to hear more of what you have to say. But anyway, enjoy your weekend, everybody. We got a rubber match tonight in Anaheim. Rodon? Right?
Yep.
Rodon versus
a guy with a 5.5 ERA.
Guy with a 5.5. But it doesn't matter because that's actually a harder matchup for that.
Yeah, of course. So, they held their own against Tyler Anderson. Good job. Griffin Canning has our number. If I see Griffin Canning on a list of pitching probables, I'm like, ah, shit. You said earlier that this year you weren't having those same thoughts of like, oh, that's a loss. Or like, oh, I don't want to see that Yankee starter. Griffin Canning, I'm like, it can't happen again, right? Oh, it did? Okay, awesome. Yeah, every time I see him. So there you go.
Rubber match tonight. Let's go, Yanks. Weekend series. Judge's hometown or home area, I guess.
Home
facing the
zone.
San Francisco Giants, who were what? On fire. And then the Phillies have taken it to them 2 days in a row now.
But they were on fire and they're back around 500. And we face, you'll never guess. I'm sure you will. Logan Webb for sure. Saturday.
We got, I don't know, who's in this rotation?
Jordan Hicks and his 2.33 ERA on Friday night. And Sunday, 10.42 ERA. This guy sucks. Blake Snell.
Blake Snell is back?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a weekend, bro.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty cool, actually.
It is fun. It's a fun one. And the Yankees can make it even more fun by taking their second series on the 3-series road trip tonight. And then we can kind of sit back and go, look, you're not going to win every series. That's why we want to beat the last place Angels in a series.
Yeah.
So that if you lose a series to the Giants, you're like, oh, well, yeah. I had fun. That was a weird blip there. That was deeply odd. What a weird series. Instead of being like, need to win this. Got to win this series. Can't believe we're coming off this Angels series loss. I mean, just can't get swept, and they didn't. But please win the series. It'd be nice if you won the series. It'd be nice if you won the series by a lot. Have an easy win. When was the last time you did that? At Milwaukee? Have an easy win. Beat somebody up a little bit. Punching bag. Come on. Win baseball games in dominant fashion.
Beat somebody up.
Have a normal game. I just, when they hit DJ, when DJ LeMahieu hit Rizzo with a grounder yesterday, I said, have a normal game. Just have a normal game. Don't play one of these. Don't do 2-1 tying run at second in the ninth with nobody out. Don't do that to me again. Win a baseball game in normal fashion. And we'll know if you did by the time you see us on Monday. For Thomas Carinante, I am Adam Weiner. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.